8 o'clock hour on a loaded Tolo Tuesday here on Sean, RJ, and Bobby. It's DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan. A ton of news taking place, so we had to track down one of the best in the business, Cowboys insider Todd Archer from ESPN, joining us on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Good morning, Todd. Thank you for the time. As always, what finally pushed this CeeDee Lamb deal over the top? Why did it finally get done now?
The calendar? I mean, isn't that as good as any reason, right? I don't know how much, like, there was movement in the last couple of days, sure, and that got us closer to what CeeDee wanted. But I think the Cowboys knew you have to get him in this week to make sure he can be fully ready to go for Cleveland. We'll see if training camp matters at all when a guy's going to have, what, 6.5 practices, I guess, before the season opener. But I would probably say the calendar played as much of a part in this thing as anything else on both sides. I'm sure CD was looking to get here as well and didn't want to go to California for a meaningless week of training camp, and they just decided let's really hammer this thing when they get back for that last preseason game.
Did the Joneses win or lose anything by waiting?
I don't think they lost anything because CD was not going to do a deal before Justin Jefferson, right? So none of that mattered. Like, I saw someone tweeted, the Cowboys could have got this done for $20 million last year. Well, they offered him $25 last year, and it didn't happen. So that's a false statement. And his agent, Torrey Dandy, knows this market better than anybody because he's had guys like A.J. Brown, the guys that have helped form this market. So he knew where it was going. So they weren't in a rush to do it. I don't think the Cowboys lost anything by, quote, waiting. Just because, again, I hate to parrot Jerry's line. It does take, and Stephen's line, it takes two sides to get a deal done. And if they weren't going to do it until the Jefferson deal, that's what they needed to have happen. Now, when did Jefferson sign? May?
June.
Whatever. Could it have done before August 26th? Yeah, it could have been from there to that time frame, but that didn't really cost the Cowboys any cap space or cash space, in my view.
So this isn't a unique philosophy they have then to wait. It's on the player too, like, because they're doing the same thing with Dak, it would seem.
Well, they signed Trayvon Diggs last year, right? I mean, it is, and they signed Terrence Steele last year. So and look, this is not a history the Cowboys have. Go back to the Bobby's favorite time of the Romo era, where they signed all their guys early. Romo, Witten, Ware, Newman, Brady James, all, you know, Colombo. You go through pretty much everybody. They signed all those guys early. They never got to this point. This changed, honestly, kind of when DeMarcus Lawrence said, the cap's not my problem. That's your problem. Give me my deal. And I think everybody's kind of followed that, with Dak taking it to the most favorable negotiating period that he's done with his agent to make sure he got everything he wanted. So this has not been like their MO forever. It's been their MO really since when did Dak get, Lawrence get tagged the first time, 2018, 2019,
yep.
Something like that. So that's when this thing's kind of flipped. And I think it's incumbent on the Cowboys now to, like, realize it's a cheap cost of living, no state taxes. That stuff doesn't really work anymore. You got to have to come up with it. And players aren't doing 6, 7, 8 year deals like those guys did back in the day. So you have to come up with a different message to get these guys done on your time. If they're willing to do a deal like Trayvon Diggs was, like Terrence Steele was, like Lyle Collins was, Jalen Smith, all those guys.
Talking with Todd Archer from ESPN. Todd, now that the CD deal is done, do you think this is an immediate pivot to, all right, let's see what we can get done with Dak? Or do you think the Cowboys front office is saying, we're going to exhale here and just take some time to figure out our football team before we get into anything else?
I would hope they can operate on two paths at the same time. So it should be an immediate pivot, because to me, if you get to the opener against Cleveland and Dak's not signed, why would Dak sign after that? Why not just play out the season knowing March 13th is the drop deadline date roughly that point for the Cowboys, because after that point, when the league year actually ends, he counts $40 million against their cap. So, and if he waits that long, he's hitting the market, and he's going to become the highest paid player in NFL history. So that's why I think there has to be an immediate pivot if you truly want to get the deal done with Dak. And again, I think some of it falls on Dak. How much does he truly want to be with the Cowboys to get a deal done that might not give him everything he would get in March, but certainly enough to even still make him the highest paid quarterback right now in the NFL?
You mentioned there that if he were to get to new league year next year, hit free agency, that he would become the highest paid player. He'd get the contract that he wanted. I know when we talked to you over the summer, you said if he hits the new league year, if he hits free agency, that would likely signal he'd be playing somewhere else. Is that still the way you feel? If he gets to a new league year, would you say that's probably unlikely he comes back to the Cowboys?
Yeah, because I don't know how the Cow. I mean, if he gets to the new year league, that $40 million is counting against their cap. So I don't know how they would be able to structure a new deal with that $40 million number already on it, and then adding that on top of a $250 million, whatever the deal would be, right? I don't know how they would be able to structure that. So that's why they need to get it done before the end of the 2024 league year.
Todd Archer from ESPN joining us here on Sean and RJ on 105 Through the Fan.
We just lost everybody, Bobby, with numbers talk. Way to go.
No. People like it. Dalvin Cook coming in here for a workout today. Cowboys still examining the running back room. I think a lot of people right now feel like Deuce Vaughn's on the roster. If Cook is signed today, is that Deuce Vaughn's spot? Do they just add to the running back room instead of subbing one person for another? How do you think the Cowboys are evaluating Cook heading into this workout?
I wonder more if it's just a look and see where this guy's at and what he has and shape and conditioning and all that. Maybe not to be a dude that they would add right away. They've typically done this right around this time, maybe with not names like Dalvin Cook, but to get a feel for break glass in case of emergency guys. I wonder if it's more that path than signing guy. But if we want to go down the path of, hey, they're looking to add the guy, I can add another running back to that. I can have four tailbacks and a fullback. You would just have to go light somewhere else. Maybe it's a three tight ends. Maybe it's one less linebacker. Maybe do some roster shenanigans with a C.J. Goodwin and keep him on the practice squad for the first few games of the season and call him up that way. So they have some flexibility in my mind with roster spots that they could add guys at a number of positions and still be okay. As much as they say they love the talent, and these are hard decisions, they could get below 50 they could cut to 50 if they needed to and still be okay. So I think they would be in a situation where they could have four tailbacks if they wanted to go that route and still keep Deuce Vaughn on the team.
Todd, did anything change your mind in Oxnard about the running game? And is there any chance, what's the likelihood that we're overreacting to many of us thinking that this running game is just not going to be good?
I'm with you because, I don't know if the story's coming out today, but I have a story coming up with on Zeke, and it's, what does he have left? We've not seen him. It's not news that he's not carried the ball in the preseason. The last time he did, it was 2017. I thought it was interesting that they upped his workload later on in camp, the first four padded practices. He had 13 runs. The last four, he had 24 runs. So they were clearly getting him ready in that manner for the season. And there were times where you saw Zeke with some burst and the jump cut and the ability to make some people miss. But until, the numbers that we see the last few years tell us that it's a player that isn't the number one back anymore. And if they're truly going by a committee, well, is Rico Dowdle or Ramondre Stevenson in New England? I don't think so. So they're definitely going about this a different way than probably a lot of people want, and really a different way that the Cowboys have ever done it. When's the last time they went committee approach?
Probably.
We go Felix Jones, Marion Barber, yeah. And
15 maybe with yeah, McFadden so, and all that.
Yeah. So, well, McFadden took over for Meat on the Bone.
Randall.
Oklahoma State. Yeah.
Meat on the Bone. Deep end.
So the underwear thing.
Then he became the guy and ran for 1,000 yards. So, yeah, I think that what the Cowboys are banking on is their scheme will be better and they'll do less, and that'll help them be better. Somehow, it's like forgetting Sarah Marshall when these guys trying to surf and he's like, do less. Now the Cowboys are like Kunu out on the beach right now. Do less.
Kunu.
Todd, is there anything – do you expect any surprises today with the roster moves, or did yesterday bring you the surprise?
I don't know if it's surprises, really. It's probably surprises for guys like us that have been following this thing and close, and if they were to get rid of a Deuce, like, it might surprise the fans, but maybe not some of us who look at the rest of the roster and wonder what they're going to do. Because is Carl Lawson a lock? He looked like he got blocked pretty good in that last game. So would that surprise people? Maybe that would surprise people if he were not to make this team. But I don't know if there's any real – I mean, Matt, well, let's go with Josh Ball. Does it matter? Like, I mean, we're not gonna be up in arms over either one of those guys. So I don't know if there's really any surprises that would make us scratch our head.
Todd,
am I missing somebody?
No, I think it's – to me, the most surprising guy – and it wasn't a huge surprise. It was just yesterday with Willie Harvey. Like, he was somebody who was in contention for the linebacker spot. That would have been one. Yeah. But no, I don't think there's a Brett Maher, Dan Bailey situation here. Todd, after the game on Saturday, Shereen Williams had asked Jerry, you know, hey, is there any regret over the Trey Lance trade? And Jerry kind of scoffed at it and said, for a fourth round pick? And was like, no, absolutely not. Is any of that posturing, you think, for them, or when they look at where they're at, do you think they're like, man, we really wish we would have had that fourth round pick this year?
I'm sure they wouldn't mind have had the fourth round pick so they could have selected a running back, right? I mean, they entered that dead zone right there where once they got past that round, they weren't going to get a guy that was better than what they had on the roster. So I'm sure there's some regrets, probably maybe too strong of a word, but I mean, by giving up that fourth round pick, you know who they weren't able to select? Let's see. This will go through the list here. Viliemi Fehoko, they weren't able to get him. Reggie Robinson, they weren't able to get him. Jabril Cox, they weren't able to get him. Let me go through the rest of these. So, yeah, we can all point to Ryan Switzer. They weren't able to get him. We can point to Dak and Jake Ferguson. They've had great success in the fourth round. But I think when you look at having the opportunity to get a guy that people thought highly of in a draft not too long ago at that position with uncertainty at that spot, I don't know why they would be regretting. Look, yeah, it was five picks. I got you. But there was improvement from Lance. that aside, from that first game against the Rams through the preseason, in my mind, that he's still intriguing enough to want to continue to look at. And maybe this is like the old school development of quarterbacks that the Cowboys would be going through with a guy that, you know, he didn't play his first couple years anyway. I'm not saying he's going to be Romo by any stretch of the matter, but it's a fourth round pick. I'm not going to get all hung up and bothered by that. Was there anybody else that I missed? Charles Tapper.
Charles Tapper. There you go.
Your editor at ESPN asks you to predict whether the Cowboys go over or under 10.5 wins.
Ooh, 10.5. I would say under, but I think it'll be 10-7.
Okay. Todd, what's been the most overblown?
Vegas says under, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
They are favored in 13 games, and generally when you're favored in 13 games, that Vegas' is way of telling you you're going to win 10.
Vegas is reading Archer, clearly.
Todd, this has been for us.
Bobby has him 15-2. That's what I don't understand.
Oh, my gosh. Does Bobby annoy you guys in the press box like he does us?
Yeah. He's so far away from us in the press box that I don't even know that he's there. So
he knows I'm there when
the real seat.
He knows I'm there when I like just kind of saunter up to him, and he's like, "What bit is coming my way?" That's when he knows.
Toddy, he's telling us all the great Archer humor behind the scenes about you. So you lived up to it with your fourth round skit right there. We appreciate it as always. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon. That's the only time Broadus texts us during the show anymore is when you're on. So thank you.
I'm glad I could broker some peace.
The great Todd Archer on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Jake Ferguson is my favorite Cowboy, and this guy is my favorite Maverick. And Bobby's going to love him even more after what he did to a world champion. Plus, the MLB pitching audio you have to hear. Next, on your home of the Rangers with Sean and RJ. Texas Rangers back in action tonight against the welcomed Chicago White Sox with a 6:30 pregame, first pitch 7 o'clock here, home 105.3 The Fan.
Really need the Rangers to come through because we need that White Sox team to go and break the record.
Oh.
We need them to get the 124 losses or whatever.
As I've said over the past week, all I care about now is lighter, rocker, Jared Sandler with a very detailed 3-minute video explanation yesterday on why you should not hold your breath on Kumar Rocker being called up. Did you watch it?
I didn't. I retweeted it because he tagged me in it, but I didn't actually watch it.
Yeah, it's funny how Sandler, like, I don't know if he retweets anything that we do, but I find myself in these tags for me to retweet all of his great Ranger information, which I'm happy to retweet it. He's a valuable Ranger source. But I wonder if you go up and down the timeline, if it's like Spittles, where it's just his stuff. It's just hockey, Rangers, hockey, Rangers. I'm like, there's no fan stuff. There's Sean and RJ content, but we get tagged. We got to talk about the charity. So I don't know. I was just wondering.
I'll be there Thursday night, by the way.
Oh, really? Where?
At the pickleball place. I don't remember what it's called.
You're supposed to give the address.
I'm supposed to be all the info. Hold on, let me find it. I just told him I'd go. I didn't look at it yet. Oh. It's Where is it going to be? It's going to be...
In the meantime, Choppy, where are you going to be tonight?
I will be at Keensay in Fort Worth from 4 to 6. Now, Hagelin said it's not tonight. It's a matinee.
Yeah.
Martini and fries, baby. Tanqueray is out there. Dude, I tried it yesterday. It was a hit. I did not think dirty fries were the way to go. The fries with olive juice on them is phenomenal. Keensay in Fort Worth, 4 to 6 tonight.
Just kidding. I knew the whole time. I was just letting him set his up. August 29th, 5:30 to 7:30, I'll be at Sandlot's happy hour. It is at Preston Playhouse, 13130 Preston Road.
I am caring about Kumar, Leiter, and Jacob DeGrom. And yesterday on the G-Bag Nation, GM Chris Young on how DeGrom looked and what's next.
Yeah, Jacob looked great. I was there in Frisco, and he looked great. First two guys got base hits on fastballs, and then Jacob started mixing in some off speed and they didn't touch him. But most importantly, what I saw was a player who was relaxed, happy. You could tell physically he was feeling fine. He wasn't stressed. He was just enjoying the moment, and to see that smile on his face and seeing him out there competing, it was really, really satisfying for me. And I hopeful that it was gratifying for Jacob as well. He deserves so much credit for how hard he's worked to put himself in this position. And, looking forward to seeing him build off that tomorrow night, and then we'll kind of reevaluate and see what the next step is.
Okay, I'm ready to move on. Not from DeGrom. Kind of DeGrom radio-wise, because I have to play this audio. I fell in love. I fell in love yesterday listening to this all over again. This is Greg Maddux's documentary.
Oh, MLB Network.
And it's on the MLB Network. And what was the first story that we played? It was about his catcher.
Javi Lopez?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was Eddie Perez. Eddie Perez. Basically, Maddux willingly gave up a home run to Jeff Bagwell in a blowout to set him up for a playoff.
Because he had his personal catcher.
Mm-hmm.
Javi was the offensive threat.
Yeah, and then I wasn't here last week, but I know this clip. I saw this where he was like, I'll pitch him inside here knowing that he won't expect three straight change-ups in the playoffs.
Well, listen to this story about Maddux from Chipper Jones when Leo Mazzoni went out there to get Maddux off the mound.
They don't call the professor for nothing.
It was a regular season game.
And now here's Gonzalez. He's got two runners on here.
And Bobby sent Leo out to tell Maddux that he wanted to walk Gonzalez. Louis Gonzalez hit Maddux pretty good. Doggy's like, nope, not gonna do it.
He goes, what? He goes, give me two pitches, but I think I can pop him up to third base.
He goes, I'm going to throw him a changeup down and away, first pitch. Then I'm going to throw him a cutter, middle in, and he's going to hit a pop-up to Chipper, and we're going to get out of this inning. Leo just kind of looks at him, and he looks at the rest of us, and he goes, okay. And he turns around and he walks back to the dugout. And I mean, you can hear Bobby's just, he's pissed, you know? So sure enough, he throws him changeup down and away, ball one, cutter in.
Got under this one a little bit, pops it down the left field line.
And I'm standing underneath the pop-up, just thinking, you have got to be kidding me. Caught it, inning over.
Bobby and I look at each other and went, unbelievable.
So, my bad. That was to walk Luis Gonzalez, not get Maddox off the mound. But the instruction was, put him on. Mm-hmm. And Greg's like, nope, I'll do it in two pitches. That's story number one.
It sounds like the only time you got a hit off of Greg Maddox is when he wanted you to, for whatever reason. Like, when you hear these stories, it's like he was so in command. Like, Bassick, you see Bassick talking about him. Bassick literally is just almost like holds such reverence for, like, the dude was the greatest pitcher ever.
Well, I mean, Bassick and, like, there's a lot of similarities from, like... From
between
a,
who?
Well, the velocity they threw with, right? Like,
I was trying to make it.
Yeah. So, like, Bassick threw the ball. I mean, he wasn't a hard thrower, and neither was Greg Maddox.
Yeah.
And, like, Maddox had, like, such pinpoint control. He could put the ball on a tee.
It's kind of like Steph Curry. It's like, this should not be an all-time great with the tools that you've been given. You know, Steph is undersized, mm-hmm. and he's not the strongest, and he's not jumping over people to dunk on him. He just had a skill set.
Yeah, I do wonder. I've wondered for a while. Like, how would Greg Maddux be scouted today?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he
or even it's like a better comparison, maybe Brady. Like Tom Brady, like probably has less skills than Steph Curry, but you know. There's a pudgy guy coming out for the combine who's not that athletic and becomes an all-time great. But this one blew my mind. Did you see the clip, RJ, about how Maddox called his game?
I don't know if I did.
All right, you would know if you did. So you're going to watch this on my computer as I play this because you're going to have to explain a little bit visually how Greg Maddox called his games.
It was just trying to understand how hitters see the ball and then what can I do with the ball to try to trick them. I'm going to throw a changeup. I know it's not worth it unless I've thrown a low fastball for a strike. I have no way to trick the hitter.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, you can't go fishing without bait. You got to bait the hook.
I think they have a fairly complicated set of signs that they go through.
I never told this to anybody, but he called his own pitches.
I think it's pretty amazing how he did it. So how he caught the ball from Eddie determined what the next pitch was going to be.
When he threw that pitch, he got fastball away, fastball inside.
Go, let's go!
Tap his leg with his glove. That is a sign to Eddie Perez.
This is change. A cutter and curveball was this.
Nobody ever knew it. I mean, it was kind of brilliant.
They don't call him a professor for nothing.
Wow.
Explain what
so
that was.
So he was doing hand signals, right? This is before PitchCom. This is before that. And he called his own game. Now, he could have called his own game by having Eddie throw down numbers and shake him off.
Yeah.
But instead, he would just like, if he tapped his leg before he was throwing it, that was one pitch. Or if he put his hand on his nose at any point. Or when he caught the ball, if he caught it extended out.
That is what blew me away.
Yeah, because now the catcher's got to be paying attention.
And Greg has to know the very next pitch very quickly what he wants to throw. Is that rare or not?
My assumption is Greg knew the very next pitch two pitches prior.
But is that how it usually works?
I think for the...
Or are you adjusting based upon the way you just threw one and you're like, okay, that didn't work and I'm changing... Like, that's very quick to be predetermined in what the next pitch is.
Yeah.
And if you're watching on the fan cam, use my hand as a glove. Maddox catches the ball back from the catcher with his arm extended. That means we're going fastball away. Then he would catch the ball. He'd let the ball come back from the catcher into his chest and catch it there to say fastball in.
Fastball in. Yeah, my assumption is that, you know, obviously I never pitched in the major leagues, but like when you're in high school and you throw hard, you just go throw. And then you got to learn how to pitch. And you're setting guys up, right? So every pitch has a purpose. And what he talked about at the beginning there was, I can't throw a changeup away without having a fastball there. And what he's talking about is the fastball, a low fastball is going to have the same eye eye level as a changeup. So the changeup is not going to work if their bat isn't sped up.
Right.
And he knows that. So he knows prior to throwing that changeup, he's throwing the fastball in order to be able to throw the changeup.
Yeah.
And that, you know, because that's his out pitch.
I got to get you on ice.
I've got, yeah.
I got to create the ice first.
Everything is about getting you to my out pitch if you're Greg Maddux. Because Greg couldn't throw the ball. Greg knew I can't necessarily throw the ball over the plate. I'm not Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson tipped every pitch. People say they knew exactly what Randy was throwing because he just tipped his pitches. It just didn't matter. He had 98 miles an hour, and he had a slider, if you were a lefty, that broke your ankle. I would be willing to bet if you asked Bassick or Holland, or every pitcher knows what they're throwing on the next
pitch. I've been meaning to get to this story multiple times. We have to do it today, otherwise it's done. Danny Jansen, did this happen yesterday?
In the doubleheader, yeah.
This is amazing.
This is the fan. So this was the guy who was traded from Toronto to Boston, and he was traded there. And the issue is that he was playing in the game that the Red Sox and Blue Jays were playing in. He was the catcher. So he gets moved to Boston. Obviously, he can't play for the Blue Jays. He was up at bat. He was up at bat when the game was called. So he became the first player ever, and Alex Cora, give him credit, understanding history here, Alex put him in the lineup as the catcher. He became the first player ever to hit and catch in the same at bat.
Wow. Okay, I originally thought this story was about him playing for both teams.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So he played, I think he was with Toronto earlier, and then...
But both teams in the same day.
Well, yeah, he did, because this was the continuation of that game.
After he was dealt. Yeah.
And he was at bat. So they had to pinch hit for him, and then, you know, obviously got put in the game as a Red Sox guy.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, like, you can't even try to make that happen. Like, once the opportunity's there, you can. Like, Alex Cora can do that, but... That's one of those things where, like, just like fate has to set that up for you.
And then I'll try to squeeze this in. And I have not seen that this morning on TV. MLB Network's on top. We're not going to see it on the bottom. That's NFL Network. But I would hope that ESPN and SportsCenter would replay that over and over and over and over again. But it is baseball.
It is baseball, so they wouldn't do that.
Yeah. We'll save Jordan Montgomery. Maybe for a future lesson. He's destroying Scott Boras, basically blaming him for his awful season in Arizona, where he has now been moved to the bullpen. How justifiable is it? When can you stop blaming the agent after Boras, he said, butchered his offseason? So Jordan Montgomery not happy with what happened this year.
No, and, you know, Scott Boras took an L. Took a big-time L last year. But that will be a short-lived L, because Juan Soto is a free agent this year. And Juan is going to get... $600 million? He's 25 years old. This is the exact guy. Like, you know, you don't want to give 10-year deals away, but when you're 25, 26 years old, you can do it.
Just how much money might the Cowboys have cost themselves by waiting on CeeDee Lamb's contract? That is next. And below the belt, right here on The Fan. The great Bobby Belt.
You ruined the morning show.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
Almost $20 million this year is potentially what you cost yourself by waiting on CeeDee Lamb. Let's talk about it. So Todd Archer just joined us at 8 o'clock and had talked about how CeeDee Lamb was going to wait for Justin Jefferson. That was the deal. I agree that when we reached this offseason, CeeDee was waiting. And technically last year too, but only because of what Todd had kind of just explained. They were trying to pay him $25 million a year last year. That was what they tried to get a deal done. They were kind of firm on that. CeeDee obviously had not blown up the way he did last year and then had the type of season that he did.
Cowboys were trying to pay him $25 a year.
Yeah, last year. And CeeDee was like, no, I'm near the top of the market. And the market at the time was Tyreek Hill at $30 million. So... The problem is that the Cowboys were never going to go to 30-31 last year. Had they been willing to do it, though, if they would have looked at it and said, we know what CeeDee's going to do, we know what CeeDee's capable of, and we know that Jefferson is coming, that's going to come down the pike,
yeah.
Then you maybe look at that and say, you know what? Maybe we should be willing to go up a little bit. We need to make an investment. CeeDee Lamb gets his deal done yesterday. 4 years, $136 million a year over the life of the contract. That is an average value of $34 million a year. He gets $100 million guaranteed. We don't have the specific details yet of how they're shifting money around in the contract. All that's going to come out. What we do know right now is that CeeDee Lamb is scheduled to make right at basically $18 million this year. $1 million a game, essentially. And
it'd work if you can get it.
Yeah, it is. They gave him a $38 million signing bonus, which when you divvy that up over the 5 years on the cap, mm-hmm. like you're allowed to do, that ends up being $7.6 million a year. So
okay, so they give him the lump today,
mm-hmm.
and they could take that lump and spread it out
divided by five. So from 2024 through 2028, there is $7.6 million on the cap every year that CeeDee Lamb is responsible for, regardless of what his salary is. So, like, that's just the starting point of how much is CeeDee costing you this year? Well, it's at least $7.6 million.
Okay.
So
they can't touch it.
No. I mean, you can't move that number. Okay. That number is going to take a hit. And when you hear people say, well, what's dead money? How do you cut somebody? How does that cost you things? If they were to cut CeeDee Lamb next year, for instance, all of those future years where they owe $7.6 million get lumped together and say, nope, you got to eat that charge today because you've cut him. He's off your roster, which means you have to pay the piper for all of it right now. And so all of your cap charges hit at once. That's what is the issue with Dak's contract right now. The idea of, well, if Dak hits free agency, they just have $40 million sitting there because it's stuff they've moved around and now they can't do anything with. So if you approach CeeDee Lamb last year and say, CeeDee, we'll give you Tyreek's deal. We'll give you $30 million a year. I think CeeDee says yes. And I think Torrey Dandy, his agent, says yes. Now, a lot of people would probably say, you have no way to know the market's going to explode like that. You don't know who CeeDee Lamb's going to be. But let's operate under the assumption that it's $30 million. He signs a four-year extension for $30 million. He had 2 years left on his deal. 2023, his fifth-year option, which is in place now. The new contract extension is an extension that does not kill his current contract. He's still making $18 million this year regardless. So what the Cowboys have essentially cost themselves is the wiggle room to say, let's max out his bonus or minimize his bonus. Let's play with the money a little bit. You've lost an extra year on the cap to be able to then finagle that number, and you're still paying $4 million more a year than you probably would have if you got it done last year.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's $16 million over the life of the contract, and in flexible cap room, that adds up to you've essentially lost $20 million this year because of how you have to structure the deal this year. And so ultimately, is that a loss?
Yeah. How could it not be a loss?
It's clearly a loss in terms of like what it looks on the books. But do you think the Cowboys view it as...
Well, what would they say? Stephen Jones walked into the studio right now mm-hmm. like Charles Haley did yesterday, and you explained all that and said all that. What would he say back?
I think that they would...
Because they don't feel it is.
On the record or in an honest moment? In an honest moment, I think Stephen would probably say, we were not... we liked CeeDee and CeeDee was very good. We were not prepared to say CeeDee is Tyreek Hill.
Right.
And I think that
no one was last year. See, that's the thing about the National Football League. You have to pay them as if like no one had CeeDee Lamb in a top five wide receiver discussion at this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
We did not. It was Devontae. It was Tyreek. It was definitely Jamar Chase. Who am I missing?
Because by the end of this deal, CeeDee probably won't be in the top five anymore.
Oh, I don't think...
Just because, you know what I mean? Because he'll be a little bit older, and there'll be somebody new who's going to pop up and be CeeDee Lamb. Because he'll be, what, 20?
He'd be 29, 30.
That's teetering.
I think you could make the case that they're like, we want to wait and see that big breakout year, right? I think that's the way they approach the Dak one. They may still be doing it again unless he wins multiple playoff games. And we wanted to see CeeDee Lamb become the unquestioned, no doubt, number one receiver that he is. And we're willing to lose $4 million a year in order to know that's the reality in the case versus the little bit of guesswork, right? Other teams are like, the Jacksonville Jaguars are like projecting with Trevor Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the Cowboys don't want to project that they want to know.
That's a good point. If I
We know about Micah. We know about Micah right now.
If I gave you the option, there are three ways you can look at team building and the way you hand out contracts to your own guys. And you tell me which one of these you would pick. Do you want to pay somebody for what they've done?
No.
Do you want to pay somebody for what they're going to do?
Yes.
Or do you want to pay somebody for what you think they're going to do based on what they've done?
Right.
And the Cowboys fall in the middle.
Yeah, I would lean towards them picking C. And I understand.
That's the safest one.
And I understand that. It's the yes.
But it's also the most cost prohibitive, right?
It's not.
Probably.
Because in order to do that, you're literally paying
a price.
Right.
You are paying a price for their ascent.
Correct.
You know?
Yeah, you're
paying a price for their leap.
Yeah, you're not buying.
But you know more about them.
Right. You're not buying Apple when they came out, when they started their company. You're buying it after they came out with like the iPod.
Yeah. It's
before
like
the iPhone, right? It's like it's growing. You see what's going on, but it's like waited a little bit.
Yes.
Rougned Net Odor, when he signed his deal, that was viewed as you bought out years of arbitration, and that is somebody who is going to continue to get better.
Yeah. Baseball teams do that with arbitration guys all the time.
Yes.
And that doesn't really kill them.
Cowboys did it one time that I can remember where they said, we are going to pay you for what we think you're going to do, not what you've done already. And it was Tyrone Crawford. And they gave Crawford 5 years and $40 million or something like that, which is not a ridiculous contract when you look at it in today's NFL. But
he was fine.
But he was not an $8 million player.
What if they thought he was going to be?
And that's the thing. I think that those kind of instances where they go, man, we paid Tyrone Crawford $8 a year. And because of restructures we have to do, there are some years where he's maybe counting $11 million, and we think he's a $4 million player now.
I support the thought process of C. I do. I have to be honest about it. I know it's easy to sit here and just kill, act like we all have a time machine and we all see the future. I supported it with Dak, and you know, ultimately they got proven wrong. Wait and see. I think they may be in wait and see Dak 2.0 again. And daring him to leave the star. And I can understand it in wanting to see CeeDee Lamb now be better in an offseason discussion. This is what happened. You have to tell me you believe this would happen a year ago. That CeeDee Lamb is better than Devontae Adams and Ja'Marr Chase. Now, if you want to tell me with a straight face you predicted that a year ago, I'll call you a liar. Because that's where we are now. That CeeDee Lamb is better in these discussions than Devontae and Ja'Marr Chase, or at the very worst, even with Ja'Marr Chase. And that's a hell of a leap. Props to Lamb for that. But I understand the Cowboys wanting to see that happen first.
Yeah, like because
this time a year ago, when he was not in the top five discussion.
No, you brought up Trevor Lawrence. It's 3 years for him now. He's in his third. Now he's going to be in his fourth.
Is it fifth or sixth?
If the Cowboys did the same thing on Lawrence, and they waited. Like, Jacksonville easily, I mean, by the time Trevor Lawrence's Dak first year comes around where they tagged him, I mean, that could be $70 million.
I view quarterbacks a little differently because
They all leap.
And so for quarterbacks, I think those are ones you've got to kind of say, I'm paying what I think you're going to do because there's only so much I can sit around and wait. Because if I wait and let you show me, we're done. But, you know, to the Cowboys' credit, I guess. I still think this should have got done last year. But if you're the Cowboys, you're sitting there, you're going, let's take a quarterback contract, for instance. Jimmy Garoppolo was paid for what they thought he was going to do. Jimmy Garoppolo became a $30 million albatross just sitting on the books for, you know, the Raiders. Daniel Jones, or for the 49ers. Daniel Jones is a $40 million albatross sitting there for the Giants, where they said, hey, we're starting to see it. We're going to bank on you, and we're going to invest in you being this moving into the future. I just don't know that there was anything at all that gave you pause about CeeDee Lamb. Even if he wasn't to that point yet, there was enough, I think you saw, that you said, man, he continues to get better.
Yeah.
It's reasonable to expect he's going to do this. And especially the way that you probably saw him in those offseason workouts and you saw the connection he has with Dak and knowing how comfortable Dak is with him and wants to get him the ball, that you knew those numbers were going to pop. And they were going to be big volume numbers. And that's ultimately where I think Cowboys cost
themselves.
Didn't
we accuse them of misunderstanding and misreading the wide receiver market a couple of years ago around the Amari time?
They misread the... Yes, did we? We did.
Yeah, we were talking about them misreading the market.
Well, they misread the market on the trade, that's for sure.
Well, Amari is one of the good examples of a contract negotiation they won, where somebody did lean on, I want to be here. And then what did they do? They went, well, we don't want you here anymore. Go, get on out of here. So they clearly misread on Gallup and seeing what his value was post-injury and believing what he could be. But, Man, Lamb just felt like the one that was so easy to get done. And I'm glad it's done. Ultimately, you're kind of nitpicking because they've shown consistently, even when they have money to spend, they don't like spending it out of here. So what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
But they did cost themselves a lot of money, I think.
877-881-1053 is the way to hit us up on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line. This is our new favorite Dallas Maverick. Someone says Kyrie is the real MVP and that Kyrie is also better than Steph. That kicks off the final hour. Plus, RJ attacks the old school in the association again. Yeah. Final hour, Tolo Tuesday edition with Nick Harris as well from DallasCowboys.com right after this.